Hi there, and welcome to the COSI Talks podcast. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist with over 23 years experience, and my passion is working with the amputee and limb loss community. My mission with COSI Talks is to educate, inform, and empower amputees, their clinicians, family members, and caregivers. Now, along with being a physical therapist, I'm also a wife and a mother to four beautiful children, and I'm a recent breast cancer survivor. So while I'm not an amputee and I don't know what it's like to lose a limb, I do know what it means to have my world turned upside down from one day to the next and to have to go through the recovery and healing process. And I want to help you on your journey. So let's get comfortable. Be sure to grab your favorite drink and have a listen. Ooh, don't forget, please follow this podcast and leave a 5-star review and thumbs up. And if you have any questions or overly flattering comments, drop them below. Hello, everybody, and welcome to COSI Talks Live. I am here a little bit late this evening, just finishing some things with the family. But we are here now. So guys, let's start the evening off right. I am hitting the hard stuff tonight with my decaf cappuccino. That's right. It's been that kind of a day. So cheers to you all. I'm going to give you guys a couple minutes to jump on board. I'm also going to go ahead and get myself started on Instagram Live. Let's see. There we go. Going live. And I am officially live on Instagram, on YouTube, and on Facebook. So guys, as you come on board, actually, for those of you who are watching the replay, go ahead and comment replay in the comment section. You can also leave me your questions. I do go back after each show and check to see if there's any questions that I can answer for those of you watching the replay. And for those of you who are watching me live, I see some of you popping on board right now. Go ahead and give me a shout out. Let me know who you are, where you're from, and what is in your coffee mug. We've got a few nice questions coming in here this evening, which is kind of good. We also have a couple of questions that were left over from last week's show with Ronnie Dixon. If y'all did not watch that show, you have several chances to do it. You can find it on my YouTube channel, my Facebook page, and also on my new podcast. So my podcast is everywhere. My team has managed to put me on pretty much every major podcast platform, from Spotify to Apple to, I don't know all the different ones, guys, but I'm on there. So you can also watch my live shows or listen to my live shows on podcast as well, because I know some of you have are doing that on your Thursday morning commutes. All right, we got Barbara coming in here from Connecticut. We've got David with from South Carolina drinking his green tea as usual. We got Beth coming in from historic Gettysburg. Very nice, Beth. You're quite the traveler. Hey, Kathy, I haven't seen your name in a while. It's good to see you again. We've got Eric listening in from the YouTube channel, as well as Moye Queen from St. Louis. We've got Victor coming in from Sarasota. Thanks for joining in. Victor, I hope you had a chance to contact Ronnie. I know I sent you his email. And Moye is drinking her Kool-Aid. We got Randall Archer coming in from San Diego, and it's good to see you guys. All right, we got a nice crew that popped on board real quick. Again, I do apologize for being late this evening, guys. Tying up some loose ends with the family. We've got Emily here from Central PA, just a peach iced tea tonight. Emily always has really great drinks. All right, guys. So for those of you who are watching for the first time, welcome. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist, amputee specialist. I've been a PT for over 23 years. I am based in Tampa, Florida. Linda. Okay. So Marianne's on board. Good to see you, Marianne. I think I saw a picture of you at the Baca boot camp, and it looks like you guys are having a really great time. I love that camp. I'm hoping someday to get there. All right, guys, we got a couple questions that came in this week, and also one or two questions from last week's show with Ronnie. So I'll start with the ones from last week. Let's see. This question comes in from Scott, and he says, we've communicated, but I need some direction in my amputee progress. I'm currently in an ALF that provides therapy. And when my leg was amputated, I was told I could do anything with the new leg I did once before. Of course, that would depend on my drive and ambition. At the time, returning to a social life, a slow dance if requested, meals. My question is, do my personal goals have to be communicated to Medicare and Medicaid so that they assign a higher activity level desired for insurance purposes? So that's a really great question, Scott. So basically, it's asking, you know, will Medicare and Medicaid pay for therapy, what I'm assuming are therapy services, to get you back to your prior level of function. And it's kind of a tricky thing with the insurance companies. And guys, by no means do I consider myself to be an expert on insurance and reimbursement. Y'all who have been listening to me for a while know that I do not claim any expertise in this area. One of the big things when it comes to insurance coverage for physical therapy is determining the functional needs, right? So is the therapy being provided helping to improve functional mobility, helping to improve an activity of daily living? Now, in my opinion, my humble opinion, I think that restoring human function and full human potential should be the goal. And I think insurances should cover to that extent. So what do I mean by that? Well, if before amputation, you were a runner, you were an athlete, you were active every day, after amputation, your insurance should cover therapy services to get you back to that point. Okay. If your goal is like Scott here, and that's to be, have a social life within your ALF, which means going to meals instead of having to have them in your bedroom, going to the dance that might be sponsored by the ALF, I think that should be covered. Is it in reality covered? A lot of times it's not. It's not, guys. And it's something that physical therapists have been fighting since probably the late 1990s when Medicare made big changes to rehab coverage, okay? So sometimes as physical therapists, we have to get a little creative in how we phrase things with insurance company, not to commit fraud, but just to show them this is a valid goal that we are working towards, right? So first step is for you as the patient to communicate to your physical therapist, these are my goals. This is what I want to be able to do. How can we get me there? And then it's up to the physical therapist to figure out how to document that and get that approved by Medicare, okay? So one of the things they can do is by making these goals functional, right? So instead of saying increase my strength, increase my range of motion, increase my balance, we say we're going to increase the strength by this many muscle grades so that I have the ability to walk from my bed to my kitchen or the dining room area in the ALF to have meals, okay? So now we've made it an activity of daily living. We've made it functional mobility. Okay. So that's how you have to phrase things as a physical therapist. And again, not an expert here. Usually when I worked in insurance-based clinics or hospitals, I would sometimes have the billing secretary help me with these notes to make sure that we would get things approved, right? So that's the thing. But again, it all starts with you telling your physical therapist what your goals are. Yes. Okay. Who else we got here? All right. We've got Don Robinson from Vancouver. Post-workout protein shake, shared your site within your talks to my amputee of 4,900 members. Thank you very much. And guys, I do want to say a moment, just thank you for those of you who share my posts, share everything that I'm doing. I really appreciate that. I'm a small mom and pop organization. It's just me and my small but mighty team. So I really do depend upon everyone sharing the word about what it is that I do in the show as well. And I'll tell you about a little giveaway I'm doing in April in just a little bit. We've got Linda coming in from New York. We've got Sherry Ann from Arizona with her coffee and white chocolate mocha. Cheers to you. What's up, Stephen? Good to see you here. We got Sherry. Oh my goodness. I haven't seen you in a long time, Sherry. She's in Orlando, Florida, drinking her iced coffee. Yes, because in Florida, we need it iced. Hello, Harsh. Good to see you, man. Cheers with the water to you as well. We've got Christy coming in. ALF. ALF is an assisted living facility, and it's not to be confused with long-term care or otherwise known as nursing home. There are two different things. So just a quick recap. An assisted living facility is where you go to live if you need just supervision assistance. So usually to qualify for an ALF, you have to be able to do everything yourself, meaning you should be able to dress yourself, do toileting hygiene on your own, and get around your home or your apartment independently with just maybe supervision, right? And that's basically what these facilities are. They usually have condos or apartments where folks live that they just need a little supervision, just a little bit of a hand here and there, but for the most part, they're independent. There's also a lot of ALFs that are specialized for folks who have dementia. So the folks that are in the early stages of dementia, where again, they can still move around, they can still get themselves dressed and feed themselves, they just need supervision help. okay? As opposed to a nursing home where there are medical needs that have to be met by nursing staff and the mobility is a bit more impaired. Hey there, Pastor David. Good to see you, man. We got Scott from West Virginia, my other Scott. Marianne says, Baca Boot Camp was wonderful. Andrea G., there's my occupational therapist listening in from her car. We got Denise, my Tar Heel, and Floyd from Mobile, Alabama. Roll Tide. We got Thomas, ALF will always be a puppet alien to me. I know, it's a little, you know, we should probably do a show at some point just to describe the different levels of care from, you know, trauma, ICU, all the way down through outpatient home health care. ALF, and definitely, you know, I had some personal experience with that myself when my father had to be placed in an ALF when he was very, very sick for a short period of time. And it can get tricky. The laws regarding it can get tricky. The benefits in it can be tricky. And you're always having to constantly stay on top of it and advocate for your loved one. But again, that's a whole nother one for later. Let's see. Victor asks, I am trying to get a microprocessor foot. How do I get Medicare to cover the foot? That's always the million-dollar question. Okay, so the best thing is, Victor, is again, to have your entire team writing letters of medical necessity. It has to come from your surgeon or your doctor. It has to come from your physical therapist and your prosthetist. From a physical therapy standpoint, usually what I do is I conduct functional outcome tests. And what these functional outcome tests will tell me is an accurate K level, because insurance companies love to see those K levels, right? And from there, I can start justifying and I can start saying the patient would like to do X, Y, Z with their prosthetic foot. These are the reasonable goals that they will be able to attain in using this foot. And therefore, that is why it is medically necessary, okay? Prosthetists should be writing from their perspective and their lens, as well as the doctor, okay? Has to all be coordinated. Sometimes with these companies, some companies, they'll give out the foot, not a problem. Other companies make you jump through a bunch of hoops. So usually I say, do it right from the beginning. Have everybody write those letters of medical necessity. If you find yourself getting denied, there is a resource and she's like my secret weapon. Her name is Julie Conley. She was on my show actually a few years back when Blatchford was a sponsor on the show. And she is just the guru when it comes to getting prosthetic componentry reimbursed even after rejection from the insurance company. And I've sent several of my viewers and patients to her over the years, and she does amazing work. So if this is something that you are interested in pursuing, you know what, let me do my email. Okay, so Victor, there's my email. If you want me to connect you with Julie, go ahead and send me an email there and remind me to do so. She's a wonderful, wonderful resource. And again, what she typically says is if you have not submitted the first request for a particular prosthetic component and you want her to help you, wait until she sees your case before you submit it, because she might be able to help you before you submit it that first time and maybe get it approved on the first time around. All right, we got Pamela on board. Good to see you, Pamela. I haven't seen you in a long time. I haven't seen your name here. Yes, Julie Conley. So like I said, she is my secret weapon that I don't keep secret because I think everybody should have access to someone like Julie. She has a wonderful story. If you dig back through, you know what? I'll have to post this one on my podcast. If you dig back through year 2020, so in my Facebook archives and the videos there, if you go back to 2020, she's there. Julie Conley, I will try to dig that one up. So Victor, if you can send me an email and say, Cozy, send me this video. And I can also send you her contact information as well. All right, let's see. We got Beverly coming in from Chesapeake, Virginia. Oh, thank you for joining in, Beverly. Thank you. All right, guys. So we've got that question. Let me grab the other question that was here. Okay. This one came in through the texting service. And by the way, guys, if you're not already on my texting service, whoops-a-daisies, not sure what happened there. Okay. Let me get this straight. Okay. Text. Because a lot of you have been asking me about this, so I'm going to try to sneak this in. Okay. Sean, you made it back from the gym on time, dude. Awesome. All right. So guys, if you're not already on my texting service, that's what you do. Text Cozy Talks to that number. You'll start getting the text and my links, and you can also send me your questions. Okay. There we go. So We got this one that came in from the text service, and it says, my question is, what is good for healing up ulcers? What has worked for a Symes amputated foot? So just a quick review, a Symes amputation is just the foot that has been removed. The rest, where's Bob? Come here, Bob. The rest of the, let me get this straight, tibia and fibula are intact, including the ankle joint, the ankle right here, the bulbous part at the end. So it's just the foot that's been removed. So sometimes what can happen is, especially in our diabetics, they can still start receiving ulcers either from a poorly managed diabetes, or if there's anything going on with the socket that's causing friction or skin breakdown. Okay. And for me, when it comes to skin breakdown, I am hyper vigilant with my patients and I encourage them to do the same as well. So during the course of time, using your prosthesis at some point in your life as a prosthetic user, you will most likely experience some form of skin breakdown, whether it's a simple blister or some chafing or something a little bit more serious. At some point you'll experience that. So usually the first time you have it, I say, okay, talk to your PT, talk to your prosthetist, identify what it is that you're seeing on your skin, whether it's a rash, like I said, a blister, any of the maladies that can happen, and identify it correctly. Okay. Because in identifying it correctly, you can also treat it correctly. Right. And then also identifying what caused it. Big one right there, because then we don't want it to continue happening again, whether it's a blister or a heat rash or a fungal infection, we don't want it to continue to happen. Now, when it gets to the point where it's an ulcer, okay, so an ulcer is actually it's the name you give anything with skin breakdown, right? But we're talking about a grade 2 ulcer, something that's getting into past the epidermis, that top layer of skin, and we're getting a little further down. That's when we need to call in the big guns. And the big guns for me are the wound care team. Okay. And again, if you are somebody who's diabetic with vascular issues and you have a history of skin breakdown, then the wound care team is something that you need to have in your Rolodex. And yes, I am totally revealing my age with that reference right there. Okay. Lost audio. Oh man. Can you guys hear me? Uh-huh. All right. Let's give it a second. Can somebody give me a heads up if they can still hear me? Okay, Harsh can hear me. Awesome. Sean, then I think it's just you, buddy. Okay. So when it comes to these ulcers that get down past the epidermis and we're getting into these layers below the epidermis, okay, we want that wound care team. So who's your wound care team? Usually it's headed up by a doctor or a surgeon, and they have nurse practitioners, they have nurses, and sometimes even physical therapists like yours truly, who work on the wound care team. Guys, these are the experts. They can tell with their eyes closed and one hand behind their back what kind of a wound it is they're looking for and what it needs to be treated with. Okay. And again, not throwing shade here, not throwing shade, but I can't tell you how many times I've had patients with pretty gnarly wounds go to their primary doctor only to be sent home with like a little tube of Neosporin or the incorrect dressing. Okay. And it turned gnarly. Okay. So again, you are your best advocate. If you have an ulcer that is not healing, if you have skin breakdown that you don't know what's going on, okay, you either go see the dermatologist, especially if it's like a rash, some sort of rash scenario, and you don't know if it's bacterial or fungal or what's going on. And then for some of these that are open wounds, ask for a referral to a wound care team. Your doctor may not know of a wound care team in your area, but thankfully they're common enough where you can just go to Google and say wound care team in my area. Okay. And get that taken care of ASAP. Yes. Okay. Awesome. Thank you guys for checking on the sound for me. I appreciate that. And again, I will say this, guys, the way you treat different types of wounds or pressure ulcers, it's very different. How you treat a pressure ulcer that is a venous pressure ulcer is different than how you treat an arterial pressure ulcer and where they're located on your residual limb. All of these things are very, very different, and different stages of wound healing require different treatments. So again, you want someone who specializes in this. Okay, next. I need a sip of my coffee. Mm-hmm. That's the good stuff. Okay, so this one also came in through the text message, and it says, curious to ask, and this was actually a question that was meant for Ronnie last week, but I'm going to go ahead and try to take a stab at it because we didn't see it. I didn't see it until today. How tight or how snug should a new socket be for an above the knee individual years after wearing sockets? Should I need to wear a sock from day one of getting a new socket? And here's a really, this is kind of a tricky question. So for my AKs, and he's saying this includes the liner and the lanyard. If you are someone who's an experienced amputee, whether you're an above the knee or below the knee amputee, hopefully you've had enough experience to know what a good fit should feel like, right? Hopefully, especially if you're years after your amputation, you've had a socket that fits well, that fits snugly, that's very comfortable to wear, okay? So if you're getting a new socket done, then you have in your brain what it should feel like, right? Okay, so that being said, when you're getting the check socket done, take your time. Have your prosthetist let you take the check socket home and test it out. And we've had this conversation several times, right? A good prosthetist, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, a good prosthetist will reinforce the bottom of that check socket with that, you know, all that casting and let you go home to trial it out. Why? Because they want to make sure they work out all the kinks before they cast that final socket, right? Because once you're done with that final socket, that's it, right? Now, are there some prosthetists that will not let you take the check socket home? Yes, they are out there. Do I agree with that? Nope. But if that's the kind of prosthetist that you have and you have to work with this prosthetist, then at the very least, ask the prosthetist if you can just spend time at their clinic up and down, testing that check socket within their clinic, okay? And sometimes that happens. And especially for some of folks who are, for example, they travel out of town to go see their prosthetist and they travel a long distance, so they can't take their check socket home because of traveling time, right? They can at least spend a couple of hours there at the clinic testing that socket out and really working out all the kinks, okay? Now, ideally, in a perfect world, when you have a brand new, shiny new socket, the perfect fit would mean just having to wear your liner and the socket. Right? That is the holy grail right there of creating a new socket. And I know I got a couple of prosthetists here on board this evening, so feel free to chime in whether you agree or disagree with me, right? But does that always happen? No. Is it because of the fault of the prosthetist? Not necessarily, right? Our limbs change volume every day. Our entire bodies change volume every day, right? Obviously, I'm not an amputee, but I can just tell, right? My wedding rings in the morning, they're real nice and tight. And by the evening, I can spin them around my fingers because my body is making changes throughout the day, right? So it could be that the socket that your prosthetist made for you the day before fit perfectly, did not require a sock. But then over the course of the next 24 to 48 hours that you began using that socket more and more and more and more, the limb shrinks just a little bit, and then you need to wear a sock, maybe a day, 2 days later, okay? This is really gonna happen in that first year to year and a half after amputation. So for my newer amputees, you might get a socket, a brand new socket one day, and the next day you're already having to put on 5-ply. And yes, that can be a very normal thing. The point is though, even if you have to add socks, that the socket's fit still be comfortable. Okay. And this is a tricky thing. And this kind of leads us, there's actually two people that sent in a very similar question this week that we're going to get to in just a minute. Let me just check these comments. Okay. Let's see. Larry says, my surgeon, after 2 wound debridements, healed me using fish scales from the Netherlands. Okay. That's cool. I don't think I've ever heard of fish scales. I did maggot therapy back when I worked in wound care back at the burn center over in Miami at Jackson Memorial Hospital. We used maggot therapy and it was the most amazing thing ever. I know it sounds really gross, but man, it worked amazing on some of these wounds that we would see, but I've never heard of fish scales. I am going to have to look that one up. David says, when I got my first K-level score, it was 3. I missed the K4 level by 1 point. Is it worth any value to be retested to attain K4 or just keep rolling along? I'm OCD, LOL. Pastor David, I totally get your OCD-ness right there, especially when I have a patient that like misses that K4 by 1 point. And I'm just like, right? Because you just want to bump up that one. Honestly, there's really not a difference. K4 is basically meant for high-level athletes like Paralympic athletes and children. Children are automatically classified as K4s, which is a good thing, right? But if you're a K3, you're going to be approved for pretty much most of the devices that you want. And it's usually, especially if you can provide good documentation as to why you are considered a K3 with those functional outcome tests, then your insurance company typically behaves, right? And right now we've got a lot of people up in DC who are moving and shaking to try to increase the reimbursements for some of the prosthetic componentry so that things like running blades will not be a luxury item, right? And at that point, I don't know, maybe you'll need to be classified as a K4 to get your insurance to pay for blades. I don't know. I'll be doing a show on that sometime later this year, actually. So that just kind of cued me there to kind of keep that question in my back of my mind. Harsh asks, I have a mole which I'm trying to clean daily with HippoCleanse and applying steroid lotion prescribed, but can't get it away completely. If you have any suggestions. Harsh, when it comes to a mole, first of all, a mole is not something that should be going away. So I don't know if that's the right term for what you have. But any mole that looks suspicious, you know, I'm going to tell you, go to the dermatologist and get it checked out. If it is a wound that you're dealing with or an ulcer and it's not clearing up, usually we don't use steroid lotion on an open wound. If it's an open wound, steroid and hydrocortisone is not something we want to use. And HippoCleanse also tends to be very, very aggressive. So if it's an open wound, HippoCleanse is not something I would want to put on it because it can tend to kill the good tissue as well as the bad tissue. It's not a selective debrider is what we call it sometimes, right? So it'll kill the good stuff along with the bad stuff. The same thing for people who use alcohol and hydrogen peroxide on an open wound, right? And I know back in the olden days, our moms used to pour that hydrogen peroxide on when we scraped our knees and big, big fizzy mess and we'd be screaming, right? The unfortunate thing is it kills the good tissue as well as the bad tissue, right? So again, anything that you see that's not clearing up, that is not looking good, go to a doctor and just have them eyeball it and identify it. Let's see. Victor says, I went to a wound care specialist in Brandon. Hey, in Brandon, Florida. Awesome. See, Steve says, hi, everyone. Coming to Bayshore Hospital in New Jersey. Hopefully I have only another 5 days here in the hospital. And all of a sudden my good leg went bad. So I'm laying in a hospital bed watching from New Jersey. Well, Steven, I hope things get better for you, but I appreciate you joining us this evening. Let's see. Emily says, I have a wound that my physiatrist just gave me cream for. I went to the wound care and was getting outpatient therapy a week later. Yeah. And again, among the doctors out there, typically like your PM&R docs, your physiatrists, and your general surgeons, they are more well-versed when it comes to wound care because of the patient population they tend to see. But again, there's a lot of primary care doctors out there that they don't have specialized wound experience. You know, so it's always good that if you feel like they're not treating the wound properly or they don't know how to treat it properly, to ask for that wound care specialist referral. Don says, once you take that new socket home, if you feel any pressure points, but you think that will just get better, do not hesitate to go back and get the problem adjusted. I did this in the past and I suffered for it. Yes. So let's bring us to the next question. And like I said, two people sent in this question. Let me find it real quick. Okay, so the question is, this particular person says from California, says, how do you know when your socket fits properly? Okay, and this is a question that actually Ronnie answered last week. So guys, if you wanna hear the prosthetist standpoint, you can listen to last week's show. It's on my podcast channel, as well as my YouTube channel and my Facebook channel, okay? So if you're a first time prosthetic user, this is probably, you know, this is a more challenging part because, you know, you've never worn a prosthetic before. You've never had something that's been clamped onto your thigh or your calf for hours upon hours upon hours. So this is where, again, the expertise and communication with your team is absolutely crucial. Okay. And those of you who are fortunate enough to have a full team, meaning you have a doctor, you have a prosthetist, you have a physical therapist, and hopefully even an occupational therapist, all of them are going to be looking at your leg and the fit of your prosthesis, and they're all going to have slightly different lenses, which is a good thing. Okay. So when I have a new patient who comes in and they'll tell me, yeah, you know, the prosthetist fit my leg yesterday and here I am today. And I'll start asking them questions like, okay, How is your comfort level? First of all, do you have any pain? Let's put the leg on, stand you up. Is there any pain? Okay. Is there any pinching? Do you feel like you are being strangled in your socket, right? And I tell patients again, the socket fit should be snug. So it should feel like when you put on a nice stretchy glove where you feel like the glove is completely in contact with your hand, but it's still loose, you know, it still gives you the ability to move, right? So it should feel like a nice snug glove, not a noose, okay? It should not feel like you're being strangled so tight in there. Okay. And again, that feeling, it takes time to appreciate what too much or too little is. All right. When it comes to pressure points, there are different areas on a BK and an AK where you're going to feel pressure from the socket. Okay. There's good pressure. And then like Dawn mentioned, there's bad pressure. And again, your prosthetist and your physical therapist should be educating you on where you should be feeling the pressure and where you should not be feeling the pressure. And this is the part that gets a little bit tricky, right? Because sometimes you are meant to feel certain pressures in the leg and certain parts of the socket. Okay. And that takes a little bit of getting used to. So in the beginning, you might have some discomfort, and notice that I'm using the word discomfort and not pain. Okay. And again, communicating with your prosthetist and physical therapist. Okay. The other thing is your skin. Your skin tells you a lot of stories. Okay. So your skin can tell you if there's redness in certain areas, if there's pink. Okay. And our darker skinned folks, you're going to see different colors of pigmentation on the skin as well. And again, your PT and your prosthetist should be educating on you on where you should be seeing this and where you should not be seeing this, okay? Because when you take off your socket on someone who's fair-skinned like me, you're going to see certain areas that might be pink, again, where the pressure is being applied to support your limb. Those are the good areas of pressure. That's the pink that we're expecting to see. There's other areas where it should not. And again, this is something I haven't brought up too much, but the complexion of your skin, right, is different. We have everything from super pale to super dark, and how that color differentiation shows up is going to be different in every person according to their complexion. So as clinicians, we need to understand how to identify the differences in color in the different pigmentations of our patients. Am I saying that correctly? And then also from our patient's standpoint. Make sense, guys? Yeah. Okay. So, and again, in the beginning, you're going to feel awkward and you're not going to know how to express yourself to your clinician and your clinical team. That's okay. That's our job to teach you what it is that you need to know and how you're supposed to be feeling. Now, when I feel that I've gotten the patient in the right fit, that I know their prosthetist did a great job with fitting that socket, that we've got the correct amount of socks on, okay, and I've identified, okay, everything is looking kosher the way it should look, I will tell the patient, think about how this feels, okay? It should always feel like this, okay? And every time you put your socket on, this is the feel that you're going for, okay? And it takes time, guys. It takes time to learn this, okay? And my goal with my patients is that by the time they're done with me, they're going to know their limb better than I do. And that's how it should be. Okay. So you see this with folks, you know, with over the course of time, they put their leg on, they go, ah, I didn't put the leg on correctly. Take it off, put it back on. And I'll go, how did you, I just felt it. Okay. But it does take time. So be patient with yourself. And I know sometimes, it's always frustrating when you're first learning how to use a prosthesis to adjust that fit, to adjust the socks, to figure out how many times to do the little click reel if you have an adjustable socket, right? The only people who do not have a problem with this is the people who get osseointegration because they don't deal with the socket anymore. So they get to skip all that part. But, you know, the trade-off is that they are going through a pretty intense procedure to get there. All right. So I hope for those of you who sent in these questions this week, I hope that gives you a little bit better perspective on it. So if you have a good team, keep communicating with them, be patient with yourself, keep trying to express what it is that you're feeling, and your team can let you know, yep, that's normal, or nope, that's not normal. We need to look more into it. Jerry Ann says, I had a blister on my stump and it was MRSA. Yeah. Yeah. And even sometimes, like, guys, people sometimes kind of chuckle at me because I take blisters very seriously, but that's why, you know, especially if folks have a history of MRSA. You know, I don't take it for granted. I'd rather be a little bit more hypervigilant than to let something get away, right? That's just kind of my take on it. Let's see. Daryl says getting my second connects on 2.0 Friday after 4 years of use on the first one. And it sounds like you really like that connects and it works out well for you, Daryl. Let's see. Benny says I took my first socket home and played softball. Of course you did, Benny. That's our Marine right there. Hua. Larry says, Carissa's. Oh, thank you. That's the name of the fish scale. Okay, I'm going to look that up, Larry. Thank you for posting that. David says, I have a newer socket. My prosthetist refuses to lower my trim line at my kneecap. Now 4 months in, my kneecap is popping and crunching and has never done this before. What should I do? Go back and squeak that wheel, David. Again, I know sometimes, and again, I'm not there to see what's going on, but sometimes with these trim lines, the prosthetist is trying to give you as much stability as possible, right? So whether you're an above the knee amputee and the trim lines are going high up into the groin area, or you're below the knee amputee and the trim lines are going up the side of your leg and over the kneecap, typically it's because your prosthetist wants to preserve stability. But sometimes that can also sacrifice mobility, right? So you got to play around. Again, you got to communicate with your prosthetist. If you're starting to get the Rice Krispies in your kneecap, then it might mean that, yeah, it's probably rubbing up against the front part of that socket. It could also be that maybe you're not utilizing your quad muscle as much and your hamstrings, so it's decreasing the stability of the knee joint, right? Because of atrophy. So this is another good thing where to kind of just see, okay, are you seeing are you noticing more atrophy in the muscle because of that? So, you know, tell your prosthetist, just say, hey, can we please take this trim line down just a little bit? It's starting to cause this reaction in my knee. Okay. And just see what they say. Dawn says tilapia fish skin is used commonly in burn victims as it packs a big punch of collagen and keeps the wound protected and just falls off once it's starting to heal. We used a lot of pigskin. That's what I'm familiar with, is using a lot of the pigskin in the burn units. And that stuff was pretty darn good too. But I think you're right. The tilapia would have a lot of nice collagen in it. Let's see. Jean asks, if I remember correctly, last week you said you have clients from out of state. How does that work? Do they come to you? Yes. So yes, Jean, I do have the occasional out-of-state patient. I've actually had quite a few in the past 5 years that I've been, or 6 years that I've been open for business. And usually the way it works is the person reaches out to me and I meet with them to see if they're a candidate. Not everyone is necessarily a candidate to come out and see me. I've had to turn away a couple of patients here and there that I didn't feel like they were medically safe enough to travel, or that I felt like what the goals that they had were not necessarily something that I could help them with. So I do like to make sure that all of that is taken care of before somebody takes the time and expense to come out here and see me. But yes, I do have a prosthetist clinic here that is very gracious about letting me use their space whenever I have an out-of-state patient. And you have my email address. Everybody's welcome to contact me and we can go from there. Let's see. There's Beth. Shelly says, what do you think the best leg to ride a horse with? Ooh, the one I have now hurts me all the time. Still can't walk with it. If I wear it more than an hour, I get sores, but they just keep adding stuff and cutting parts out. Been 4 months of not taking a step without help. Yeah, Shelly, that's all sorts of red flags right there. I have had a few horseback horsemen and horsewomen on the show, and they wear their prosthesis without a problem. Usually they have to, in my A case, they may have to make some adjustments with the socket so that it doesn't ride so high up into their groin. Some people opt to not use their prosthesis if they have a very short AK limb. It's one of those, like, you got to get out there and try. But in your case, what has me kind of a little concerned right now is the fact that you're getting sores after just wearing it for 1 hour. And the fact that they've been working at it for 4 months and you haven't seen a resolution there. So again, Shelly, I can't see you. I don't know what your leg looks like. I don't know if perhaps you have a bit more challenging residual limb. But you know, it sounds like it's worth you getting a second opinion from another prosthetist just to see what's the holdup here. Why can't they make you a socket that doesn't cause skin breakdown? I will say this, Shelly, that if you have any open sores right now, you really need to let them heal completely before using your leg again. And I know that can be really, really frustrating. because a lot of times you want to just kind of keep going and keep going and keep going. But if you have open source and then you keep continuing to use the prosthesis, all you're doing is rubbing those sores open again. Guys, I haven't checked my Instagram feed in a while. Ooh, we've had a lot of people come on board in the Instagram. Guys, thank you for, ooh. All right, guys, and I see some people here that were on here. Oh gosh, and I missed one of the questions there. All right, here we go. Jim says, I wish I wasn't such a slow learner. Jim, slow and steady for me, man. That's what gets it done when it comes to learning. Jerry Ann says, wound care comes to my home, and I love that I've had several wounds. So David says, no, it's physically pushing the kneecap up when I put weight onto it. Yeah, that's not good. So David, you need to communicate that with your prosthetist and see what they can do, because it shouldn't be pushing the kneecap up. It should be gliding over it. Sitting on, if there's any contact with the kneecap, it should be gliding over it and not pushing up against it like that. Not to the point where it's causing discomfort like that. All right. I think, guys, all right. I think we covered all the questions. Sorry, I had to flip through a couple of pages here. Let's see. Teresa says, to lose suction with a correctly fit subischial socket, especially since to stand. So subischial sockets are something I've come to appreciate more in the past couple of years. It's an art form, that's for sure. I've seen a lot of subischial sockets that were not fit really well, and that the prosthetist who was making them was not terribly experienced, and it was kind of a disaster. But then I've seen some subischials that were just beautifully made, and patients can really just take off and have a lot of freedom because the trim line is so much lower, and they can move that hip through better range of motion and utilize the quads and the hamstrings and the glutes that much better. But yes, when it comes to the subischial socket, you really need to have your suspension system in check and super tight, super well done right there, because you don't want it coming off. But yes, it is possible to have a subischial socket with suction correctly fit so that it, when you go from sit to stand, it doesn't pop off. It is possible, Teresa. Yes. Shelly says, I've been off it for 2 weeks now to heal. And then the other thing you want to think about, Shelly, and again, this is just to help you troubleshoot and help your team troubleshoot. When everything is completely healed and you start wearing your prosthesis again, you can't just put it on for like 4 to 5 hours, right? Because even though the skin is closed, it's new skin, right? You got to think of it like baby skin, okay? So you have to wear the socket for maybe 20 minutes and then take it off and see if the skin is getting red again, okay? And that could indicate to you where the pressure is happening, or it just might mean that your skin needs a little time to get used to it, and you slowly increase your wearing time to prevent those sores from opening up again. That's something I've seen a lot too. So just things to think about and to talk to your team about. Emily, yes. Oh goodness, Emily, give me a second. I did get your text message. And you know what? I forgot to, hang on, Emily. Emily, would you be able to type in your question for me, please, darling? I do remember getting it, and I am so sorry to say that I forgot to put it onto my sheet right before I went live this evening. I do apologize. That sometimes happens. Mom of four brain sometimes kicks in. Yeah. So actually, Emily, I'm going to give you a minute. If you can please retype your question in, I would appreciate that. It was a good question. I can't remember right now. Of course, I can't remember what it is, but it was a really good question. Let's see. In the meantime, ooh, here's another question by Floyd. It says, my current socket and breaks on my skin under the ischium bone. We've got a lot of problems here with broken skin this evening. It's the only problem. I need a new socket. I'm wondering if I could send David Rotter Prosthetics a scanner cast so he could make me a new socket without me having to travel to Chicago from Alabama. So Floyd, I'm sorry to say, I mean, I can't speak for David Rotter. I've heard wonderful things about him. I've heard he's an amazing prosthetist, and I really look forward to someday meeting him in person. But I've never been formally introduced to him, but I think it's pretty safe to say that in general, prosthetists need to have you in their office. For me, I love sockets that are made by hand that are hand casted. I think those are always the best fit. I know we have a lot of wonderful hoopy scoopy technology out there nowadays. And several prosthetists successfully use this technology, this computer aided design for sockets. I personally prefer hand casted sockets. I think those are the ones that always come out fitting the best. And obviously you need to, you know, be there in person for that. The spare tire syndrome. So Beth, I am forwarding that question to Ronnie. And you're basically asking for the liner, you know, why does it keep rolling down on your below the knee socket and creating like that spare tire effect? A lot of times it's just sometimes with, you know, the compression of the liner, it's not necessarily a graded compression, like a compression garment. So with your compression garments, you'll have more compression on the bottom and it gets a little bit lighter as it goes up top. Liners just have kind of a uniform compression. So sometimes if the residual limb, it might just be a different shape and it may not accommodate to that. I've seen it happen with some folks. And it's something that I will definitely ask Ronnie more about, the sleeve, not the liner. Okay, the sleeve. My bad, Beth. I've seen this happen a lot with my patients, and sometimes it's just unavoidable sometimes with the sleeve rolling down. If anybody has any hacks, I would love to hear about it right now. But Beth, I will definitely send that question off to Ronnie. Emily is asking, what is prosthetic abandonment? So prosthetic abandonment is when somebody abandons the use of their prosthesis. They just simply stop using the prosthesis or don't start in the first place. The number one reason for prosthetic abandonment, drum roll, socket discomfort. Right. And it was a study, and you know, I can't quote which study it was, but it was a study that I read. And it basically said the number one reason that amputees will not use their prosthesis is because their socket is uncomfortable. Right. And you guys hear me talk about it all the time, making sure your socket is comfortable and not settling for less. And it's for that particular reason. Emily then asked, what would you focus on in physical therapy for a person who isn't an ideal candidate for a prosthesis or has found a prosthesis to be too challenging? And that does happen on occasion. There are some folks who are amputees that they either choose not to use a prosthesis, or they attempt to use a prosthesis and then, you know, come to the realization that it's not going to be a realistic form of mobility for them. Okay, so if somebody's using a wheelchair for their primary mode of transportation, then there are things to work on, okay? Sitting in a wheelchair all day can have its effects as well. The first one being the back and the core, okay? So we focus a lot on building that core, building it strong so that the person can sit well in the chair and not be slumped over and start developing low back pain, thoracic pain, or neck pain. Okay, so that's a real big one right there. The next thing is if the person is, if it's a manual wheelchair, making sure that their shoulders are nice and strong so that they're not blowing out their shoulders by wheeling their wheelchair throughout the day. Okay, and then continuing to work on everything. Just because you're not using a prosthesis does not mean that you should not continue strengthening your pelvic muscles, your lip residual limb muscles, right? Because especially when you start transferring from one place to the other, all of this comes into play. Okay, and then last but not least, definitely arm strengthening. Because again, as you're transferring from one place to the other, you're gonna be relying upon your arm strength, your shoulder girdle strength, and your core strength. So yes, there is a lot that can be worked on in physical therapy for someone who decides to forego the use of their prosthesis. Okay, and actually guys, I'm gonna use this moment to shamelessly plug. There's a QR code. Actually, I'm going to use this QR code because it's bigger and it might be easier for you guys to scan. So for this QR code, this is for my amputee exercise program. There's 150 exercise videos for above the knee amputee and below the knee amputees. There are also two books for above the knee and below the amputee. And these include exercises that can be done with the prosthesis and without the prosthesis. And it's got exercises for arms, legs, core strengthening, balance, and flexibility. So again, for those folks who are using a prosthesis and those folks who are not, it's all in there. All right, guys, let me get back here. An elbow from Then Walkers. Yes, Shelly. Emily says, I find transferring to be more challenging since amputation, especially when not using a prosthesis, nothing to push off of. And Emily, there are some folks that the only reason they get a prosthesis is for transfers. And that's a perfectly valid use for it. Right? Some of our users that are classified as K1s, meaning that they're not going to be functional ambulators for whatever reason, right? But that they can, you know, they can take advantage of the use of a prosthesis for transferring purposes. And I had patients like that, that we would put there, we would sit them up at the edge of the bed, we would put their prosthesis on, and it would just be enough to get them to stand on it and pivot and sit back down in the chair. The other reason that sometimes people might still keep their prosthesis on is because it gives you the weight and the balance of another leg, right? So think about it. If you are a below the knee amputee and you are sitting in a wheelchair all day, you're going to naturally favor leaning over to your sound side, just like you are when you're standing, right? Because there's more weight on the sound side and you're just going to naturally drift there. So some people might wear their prosthesis while sitting in the wheelchair just to kind of keep their balance a little bit more even. All right. So things to think about. Thank you, Stephen. Roll Tide. Beverly says, my husband is a recent double amputee and upper body strength and PT has made the difference for him. He is not a candidate for a prosthesis, but he is building his core for transfers and it's working for him. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I see some folks that, you know, they are usually, you know, my bilateral above the knee amputees, and they choose to use wheelchairs for mobility. And the way that they can move their bodies is incredible. And it does take a lot of hard work, but it's really amazing to see how much independence that they can get once they learn to transfer themselves from one place to another. And again, this is where I feel like my profession can give back quality of life during these moments like this. Emily says, I do that and never thought of it. Yeah. Yeah, think about it, right? All right, guys. I think I got all the questions. Guys, if I did not answer your questions, there is my email address. You know, feel free to email me. If I missed your question this evening, I do apologize. It was not done on purpose. Email me and I will get back to you on that question. And then I just want to finish the evening by saying a special thank you. A viewer sent me the most lovely email and I read it minutes before I went live. And it was just such a beautiful email about what she has learned from watching this show and catching me up on how things are going with her situation. So thank you to that person. I really appreciate those kind words. It gives me the encouragement that I need to keep going with this vocation. That's just lovely to hear. So thank you again, guys. Oh, the giveaway I'm doing for April. Hey, listen up. Okay. This is a good one. Hang on. Don't click out yet. All right, guys, here's the giveaway I'm doing. If you share my blog, I got a blog. If you didn't know I have a blog, I have a blog and it's pretty cool, right? Or if you share a link to my podcast on any of your social media channels, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or your stories or whatever, I just need help getting the word out, okay? So in the up through the end of April, I am keeping track of everybody who shares my blog or my podcast. And you can find the links here on my Cozy Talks page, on my Cozy Talks webpage. You just have to share the link and share it out somewhere and then tag me so I can give you credit for sharing it. I am giving away a full year subscription to my video program and one of my books. So it's $120 value, guys. It's a pretty good deal. And guys, if I get over 100 shares, I'll give away two of these, two packages. Okay. So guys, share the show, share my blog, share my podcast, share something and tag me in it so I know that you shared it. And at the end of April, I am going to do this giveaway. Yes? So you guys have your homework set. Yeah? Okay. And for those of you listening to me on the podcast, thank you again for listening. Don't forget to leave me a 5-star review and to subscribe to the podcast in general. All right, guys, with that being said, I'm going to sign off this evening. Thank you for letting me be a part of your lives this evening. I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.